This is the U105 phone-in with Frank Mitchell.
Good morning to you. It is the 25th anniversary today of the Shankill bomb. 9 innocent people were killed in an IRA attack. And this morning, as I mentioned, at 20 to 9, people are complaining to us about the lack of sensitivity in the family notices page of the Irish News, where two sections of the death column ask for prayers for Thomas Begley, the IRA killer who lost his life while planting that bomb. Your memories of that day are very welcome this morning, and we'll speak to people who were directly affected by the atrocity. Also on the programme this morning is work finally going to get moving on the Primark building. Another set of big names go head-to-head as far as RHI is concerned. And there's a £50 voucher waiting to be won this morning. Courtesy of Tesco, it might as well be yours later on. Just listen out for that cue to call. Now, 25 years ago today, just after 1 o'clock, busy Saturday afternoon, a bomb exploded at Frizzell's fish shop on the Shankill Road in a no-warning attack. 9 innocent people were killed, including 2 young children. One of the bombers also lost his life in the blast, which went off prematurely. They'd been targeting, according to the IRA, a UDA leadership meeting due to be held above the shop. 25 years. Where have those 25 years gone? I remember it very clearly because I was working as a continuity announcer in UTV that day, and the news editor came in and said, we have to interrupt the programme, so you need you to read this bulletin, Frank. And I remember reading it. I could hardly believe what I was reading. And then our reporter, Jane Lockery, who we'll speak to later in the programme, she was very quickly on the scene, and the news team took over and broadcast everything that was broadcast to the shock and horror of those who would have been watching. One of the people most directly affected that day was Alan McBride, who has been very high profile since and has been seen very much as a figure of forgiveness in Northern Ireland. Alan, good morning.
Good morning, Frank.
Alan, I suppose the most important question today on the 25th anniversary is, how are you this morning? Is this morning any different from any other morning?
It feels different, you know. I think that given it's the 25th anniversary, there's a lot more focus on the anniversary. Of course, we have the anniversary every year, and I just go about my business. Sometimes I'll go out to the cemetery and maybe just, you know, leave some flowers or that sort of thing. But this year, it's very different. Obviously, you had the Stephen Nolan's programme last night. Earlier on last night, we also had a walk around the different bomb sites on the Shankill, because of course it wasn't just the one bomb, there were several over the course of the Troubles, and it was great just to gather with families and people from the Shankill community to do that. It was a very respectful walk. We just went to each site, said some prayers, read out the names, and then we just moved on, and we sort of made our way up towards Woodville. So yes, I mean, I think this year does feel very different, and I think it's great for me, as someone who lost someone, to have that support, not just of my own family, but also of the wider community as well.
We talk to you, Alan, as if everyone knows what you've been through, and we haven't even mentioned who you lost. Sharon, she was 29 and she was working in her dad's shop. You lived in Kilcoole Park. And there's been much debate and discussion since Sharon's death and the death of the other 8 innocent people about how people cope with such a tragedy. And you may have coped better than other people. You may have coped differently than other people. And I notice you writing on Eamon Malley's website, eamonmalley.com, and you're calling on the politicians to focus and look to the future. It was that part of your healing process, that you were able to look to the future, whereas so many people, quite understandably, look to the past?
It very much was, Frank. I mean, I don't know if your listeners can remember, but certainly when Sharon was killed on the 23rd of October 1993, for 2 or 3 years, I had a very focused campaign aimed against Gerry Adams. I would have chased them around Washington, New York and Boston whenever they were out there fundraising. This was after the 94 ceasefire. I can remember confronting him at Dublin Airport when he was coming back in from one of those trips. And, you know, so I had a very focused campaign aimed against him. And the reason for that was very simple for me. He carried the coffin of Thomas Begley. When he did that, he became the public face of the Shankill bomb for me. And so he was a person, I suppose, that I directed my anger at in terms of the leadership of Sinn Féin, showing solidarity and support for that bomb. I mean, I've come, I suppose, in more latter days to look at it slightly differently. And I realise that Gerry Evans, I don't think, could have done anything else but be represented at that funeral. And I myself have been on my own journey. I don't regret taking placards and standing outside Sinn Féin offices and all of that. But I started to, you know, come to terms with what happened probably about 2 years after the bomb happened, and I started to reflect on the big why question, and I started to think about how I was brought up in Northern Ireland. I grew up in a loyalist housing estate. My father was a member of the UDA. I was involved in most things that, you know, kids growing up in those housing estates in those times got involved in. Riots, you know, being, you know, going down the streets, because where we were in the Westland, it was surrounded by Catholic areas looking for Catholics to fight. So it was a very sectarian upbringing. I can remember my Uncle Cecil coming into our house, and, you know, he's a man, a great guy. I loved him to bits, but he's a man of his era. And he told me that, you know, you could tell Catholics apart just because of the way they looked. You know, they had a Catholic look about them. And all this stuff, of course, is nonsense. But I think when you're growing up in that community, you're starting to, I guess, you know, just get bought into this sectarian way of thinking. And when I started to think like that, I started to think about the two people that murdered my wife. And I mean, they came from Ardoyne, which is an area probably about 5 minutes walk from where I grew up in the Westland. It was one of those areas that just bordered the Westland. And, you know, I would never have been in their area. I doubt very much that those guys would have ever been in my area. And maybe they had a similar upbringing that I had. Maybe they had an Uncle Seth in their house as well. And maybe, you know, their upbringing was quite sectarian. I mean, it must have at least played some part in the sense that they were done to the Shankill that day without any, you know, regard for the people that were there, that lived there, that were in that shop, and they left the bomb in that counter and they killed people. So I started to think like that, and I realised that, you know, that perhaps those that joined paramilitary organisations and got sucked into the violence were themselves, in some sense, victims of the society in which they lived. Now, none of that excuses what they did, of course. And I mean, I grew up in the Westland. I didn't join a paramilitary organisation, so, you know, so they have to bear some personal responsibility. But it does help to understand a wee bit about what went on here for so long. And so when I started to think like that, frankly, the conclusion I came to was that, you know, if we're going to see genuine progress made here, we're going to have to just stop putting all the blame on people who joined paramilitary organisations and who planted bombs and did things like that, and start looking at a much wider question around the very fabric of our society, the way sectarianism has played such an important part. And to be honest with you, I think it still continues to play an important part. It's probably not just as pronounced as it was, but it's definitely still there. I mean, and I suppose that was really the reason behind the article in Eamon Malley's blog. I just wanted, basically, our politicians to get back around the table and to try and make this place work. I tell a story in the blog about what happened just a few years after the Shankill bomb, and I really wanted to move into a mixed area because I wanted my daughter to know little Catholic friends as well as Protestant friends. And so I did that, and Zoe became great friends with a couple of girls across the street. And I can remember one 11th night, their father coming round to the house and asking me to come over for a barbecue. And of course, on 11th night, I always went in the bonfires. I used to take my mum and dad around them, and I enjoyed doing that. I mean, I have absolutely no time for the sectarianism that goes on at them in terms of the burning flags and effigies and all of that. But that's what I do. I do it every year. And that particular year, I said, well, look, I'll go over and I'll have a burger and a beer, and then sure, I can go in the fires later. And when I arrived at their house, they had built a small bonfire in their back garden for me. Now, these were Catholic neighbours. We sat around, we drank beer, we had burgers, we told stories, and it was wonderful, you know. And it was me celebrating my culture, my tradition, with a couple of Catholic neighbours. And I then went down to Mount Burnham, and I was down at their bonfire, and I watched as the Irish tricolour was burned and the effigies of Gerry Evans and the usual trappings that go with it happened. And I remember thinking to myself, you know, why can't it be like the way it was up in my friend's house? Why can't it be like that all the time? And so that's where this whole notion, Frank, comes from, about what does it mean to be a good neighbour in this society? Because I think if we were to you know, look at politics from that perspective. And I know that's a wee bit wishful thinking because I know that people's hearts and minds aren't there. But the question I would have is, well, why couldn't they be there? Why not, you know? I mean, if you think about it from a DUP perspective, if they wanted to be a good neighbour to Irish Republicans or to Nationalists, what would they do? I mean, what could they do to make Irish Nationalists and Republicans feel welcome in this community, to make them feel that they are equal in this community? And I would suggest to you that they would have an Irish Language Act in the morning, that they should have one. It doesn't have to cost the earth. It doesn't have to be at the expense of education and health and all these other things that some of the, you know, the those that are a bit negative would keep saying. But we could have something that would just send out a message to say, look, we value you. We value your culture. We value your way of life. And it could be reciprocated as well on the Sinn Féin side, because one of the big fears, of course, that unionists and loyalists have is that there's a war on culture, that nationalists and Republicans are trying to take away from British identity and British culture and loyalist identity and loyalist culture. And, you know, so what could they do to try and make unionists and loyalists feel welcomed? And I say, well, look, you know what? We're not going to go after your bonfires. We're going to allow you to have your marches. You know, we're going to welcome you into these days. Now, I know when I'm thinking and saying all these things, Frank, it's one person, and it's maybe quite naive, and it's maybe wishful thinking and all of that because the people aren't there. But we need to start in our society starting to come to terms with the fact, well, what do we need to do to help the people to get to that place? Because that's the kind of society that I want to live in. It was the kind of society, to be honest with you, that I think was very much envisioned in the Good Friday Agreement. I mean, it was that agreement said very little about victims and survivors. But one of the things it did say was that a lasting memorial to the victims of violence would be a peaceful and a just society. And whilst we have a relative peace at the moment, there's not the same number of people being killed. There's not the number of bombs going off. But in terms of people being reconciled, I mean, we are really, really very far from that. Our government is down at the moment, not because of the RHI scandal. That's certainly maybe the straw that broke the camel's back. But that's not what's being spoken about now. The issue that's keeping us down is back to that age-old problem of identity, issues around Irish language, etc. And so the article on the Éireann Blog's website was just to basically, you know, just to encourage our politicians, look, come on, 25 years after my wife died, I mean, I have more reason than most to hate. I have more reason than most not to want, you know, to reach out the hand of friendship to Irish Nationalists. And I've been able to do it. I've been able to overcome that and do that. And I'm asking you guys now to show a wee bit of leadership and to do the same. I also made the point in the article that, you know, when the Good Friday Agreement was signed, when the issues we were facing back then is a lot bigger than the issues we're facing back now. Well, of course, we had politicians of the caliber of John Hume and David Trimble, you know, David Irvine and others who were able to, you know, stand up and make these things work. And I just wonder sometimes, you know, do we have the same caliber of politicians in place now? You know, you had Dr. Paisley, you know, Dr. Never Never, as I called him, you know, making that, you know, historic deal with Gerry Adams and then him and Martin McGuinness going in and sharing power. And I know they were ridiculed as being the Chuckle Brothers and all, but I'll tell you, I would give anything to be back in the days of the Chuckle Brothers than what we have now.
It's interesting listening to you, Alan, and people should listen because you are obviously a true victim of the Troubles and you do look forward. The vast majority of what you're saying is looking forward, with the exception of just at the very end where you look back to where you see stronger leaders in the recent past as opposed to the leaders that we have today. But on a day like today, people find it very difficult to look forward. They can't help but look back and see the hurt that was visited upon our communities by different factions and sections within the community. You said yourself as part of that presentation that your own family had links to the UDA. You weren't a member of the UDA yourself at any point. Is there anything within you that accepts the IRA argument that they were targeting the UDA that day and they weren't targeting innocent people?
I have absolutely no doubt, Frank, that they were targeting the UDA that day. I mean, I think that's been proven. The UDA did meet in the office above the fish shop. They met there regularly. What I do know is that there was no meeting on that particular day. So I think whoever was going out and gathering intelligence for the IRA obviously got it horribly wrong. But let's set that to the one side for a moment, because I don't think that in any sense justifies what happened on the Shankill Road that day, because the two young people, and they were young, they were 19 years old, and they walked into that fish shop that day. you know, they were going to leave a bomb in that counter which was going to kill anybody that was standing in that shop or outside it. There was going to be no warning, because had they given the warning, they would have had, you know, the people up the stairs would have got down the stairs and would have been out. You know, so as far as I'm concerned, that bomb that day was meant to kill, and it was going to kill. Of course, they wanted to kill UDA men, but they didn't care who else they took with them. And it's that callousness, that sense of disregard just for ordinary people going about their day's work. So don't be fooled or don't buy into this notion that, look, you know, really the IRA were the good guys here and they were after these bad UDA men and all of that. I think that's nonsense. I think that they absolutely were being targeted. Of course they were. But listen, the people in the shop that day were expendable as far as the IRA were concerned, and that's morally reprehensible in my view.
How do you feel this morning that people are complaining to us about an article in the Irish News? It's not actually an article. It's in the death column of the Irish News. And it makes reference to Thomas Begley, who died that day. Sean Kelly was the other bomber. He served time in prison, was released on the Good Friday Agreement. But it says in the family notices of the Irish News, Begley, 25th anniversary, in proud and loving memory of my dear friend and comrade Thomas, will those who think of him today, a little prayer to Jesus say, will never be forgotten. And that's from a guy called Eddie. And there's another one that says, Thomas Bootsy, in brackets, his nickname, in proud and loving memory of my close friend and comrade Bootsy, where have the years gone, my friend? They have gone so quickly, and I think of you every day, especially on this day, as I stand by your grave. Miss you dearly, my friend Bootsy. St. Pio, pray for him. Always remembered by your friend, a guy called Kells. On a day like today, should we be thinking about Thomas Begley the way we should be thinking about the people who died in the atrocity, the innocent people? Your wife, Sharon, Leanne Murray, Michael Morrison, Evelyn Bird, Michelle Bird, Wilma McKee, George and Gillian Williamson, John Frizzell. Should we be including Thomas Begley in the conversation this morning when we're thinking about innocent people who died that day?
Well, to be honest with you, Frank, I haven't spared a thought for Thomas Begley, nor am I likely to. At the end of the day, he killed my wife. He carried the bomb into that shop that day. He knew what he was doing. But that aside, I think it's completely understandable and justifiable, and it should happen, that Thomas Begley's friends and family want to remember him, because of course he lost his life, and Mrs. Begley lost his son that day. And so I respect the fact that, you know, that because this is not the Irish News, of course, it's calling for Thomas Begley to be remembered. This is friends of Thomas Begley that is writing in and wanting to leave a prayer. And I think that's absolutely the way to do it. Of course, now 20 years ago, not 20 years ago, 5 years ago at the 20th anniversary, they had the unveiling of the memorial to Thomas Begley in Ardoyne, and in my view, that was everything about that memorial was wrong in terms of how they did it. They had a colour party, they had the speeches, all of that praising the bravado of Thomas Begley. I don't think what Thomas Begley done was brave at all. To target women and children, leaving a bomb in the shop, even though you were trying to get the people who were up the stairs, is an act of cowardice in my view. And so that was wrong. Had they 5 years ago have had a respectful vigil for Thomas Begley and do what they were doing today, writing memorial notices in the Irish News, that would have been completely understandable and acceptable in my view. So I have no issue with that at all. Of course, Thomas Begley should be remembered by the people that loved him and cared for him. And knew him, but to expect wider society to do that, I think is a bit of a stretch. And I know that certainly the Shankill family would find that very, very difficult to do. But of course, within Thomas Begley's family and his community, they have every right to remember him in the way that I'm remembering my wife. Of course, I would not want to stand in the road of that at all.
Alan, I really appreciate your time this morning. Really appreciate it, 25 years on since the tragedy. Thanks for coming on the programme.
Yeah, thanks, Frank.
That's Alan McBride, who lost his wife that day. in the Shankill bombing. If you're just joining us, you're very welcome. Your opinions, of course, and everything you're hearing on the programme, always very, very welcome indeed.